From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. I'm pleased to have with me Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Paul Muldoon. He's the New Yorker poetry editor. He's a professor at Princeton. He's a singer and guitar player for the band The Wayside Shrines. And Paul Muldoon's new poetry book, Word on the Street, Rock Lyrics. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, it's a delight. Thank you very much for having me.
So when you were growing up in Ireland, you were actually about the same age, and you were listening to music, were you listening for the lyrics?
You know, at some level I was. Funnily enough, I was remembering the other day one of the first songs I sang. And by the way, I'm not really much of a singer, and I'm even less of a guitarist, if the truth were told.
It says right here on the album, singer-guitarist.
Which it has to be. The truth has to be told. You know, I remember vividly one trip to the seaside I took. It was in the early 60s, and I remember vividly driving people crazy with my rendition of a song called It Was an Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini, which is hardly one of the great songs of all time, but it's certainly memorable, it's catchy, and I suppose at some delight, at some sense there was a delight in the lyrics, yes. You know, I've always been interested in country music, Irish music, of course, many of the great Irish songs, including poems, the great poem by Patrick Kavanagh, which really became a song as it went into the popular imagination, written to the tune of She Moved Through the Fair. And it was that was part of the back of the mind.
Was it the lyrics of songs that kind of led you to poetry? Was your interest in poetry coming on at the same time? Is there any connection to it up until before this book?
You know, the person who really got me started as a poet was T.S. Eliot. And it has occurred to me more recently, I suppose, I wasn't quite aware of it at the time, that T.S. Eliot actually includes a huge amount of popular song in his poems, lots of references to songs, music hall songs, in The Wasteland and other poems. But, you know, I was also, of course, reading Elizabethan poems, the metaphysical poets, in particular John Donne and Herbert, those guys, and many of whose poems really doubled as songs, sometimes called a song, like the John Donne poem Go and Catch a Falling Star. W.B. Yeats, the great Irish poet, whose songs are poems and whose poems are songs. And again, a poem like The Lake Isle of Innisfree, one of his better known poems, really based on a popular song. I guess what I'm trying to say here in my roundabout way is that I was always conscious of some connection between the two activities, though they're clearly distinct, they're akin.
And it's an interesting project, the most recent one, your most recent book, The Word on the Street, which is rock lyrics. And in fact, there's a kind of a companion CD with it, with the band you're in, the Wayside Shrines. And we thought it would be interesting to kind of hear you read one of the poems and maybe hear the musical rendition of it. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how it changed, how it stayed the same. And you wanted to do one called Over You. Could you read a little bit of that for us?
Certainly. So it begins like this. The things they make in Trenton, this is a New Jersey band, of course, and Trenton is a town there where the slogan which we see on a bridge coming in and out of town is Trenton makes, the world takes. The things they make in Trenton are taken by the world. You were made in Trenton, I took you for my girl. You'd broken up with Jesus, his voice was soft and low, he still hung between us. He and I would come to blows over you, my darling, over you.
I
And so that is the musical version of Over You, and you read a little bit of your poetry from it. One thing that strikes me right away is just hearing you read it, it was a much more intimate experience, one voice speaking to another person. When you hear the band perform it, it's the same words, but it's hard imagining that intimate experience because at least there's the whole band there with you. It's not a one-on-one connection.
You know, that, of course, is part of the very delicate balance that that's been negotiated here. As has been said more than once, the poem brings its own music. The lyric needs music to fill it out. It's missing something. Now, I mean, one can certainly present this, as I just have, as a reading. But frankly, that is one experience. Just as one can read aloud Eleanor Rigby, say, by the Beatles, or one may read aloud Bird on a Wire by Leonard Cohen, or one may read aloud Darling Lorraine by Paul Simon, or The River by Bruce Springsteen. And they all somewhat stand up on the page and read in that context, but they don't quite become what they truly may be until that other component comes into play.
So when you were working with the band on a musical version of that song, did you say, you know, it would be, as the person who wrote the lyrics, it would be interesting to have a woman's voice, a man's voice? Did you kind of contribute to the way the music arrived?
You know, one of the great things about this band is that there are several teams of composers within the band. And one of the things we love about the band, of course, is that no two songs sound the same. It's really a badge of honour with us that we're very various, not the kind of thing probably that a traditional record company would be interested in. They'd want everything to sound the same. But one of the delights for me is to hear what other talents will bring to the table. I have always a sense as I write the song that it is settable, that because it's constructed in a certain way, that allows for it being settable. But one's never quite sure how that's going to pan out. I mentioned Leonard Cohen's great song, Bird on a Wire, which, of course, one associates with a particular rendition by Leonard Cohen himself. But if one's heard Willie Nelson sing Bird on a Wire, one suddenly realizes just how, on one hand, malleable the song is, and on the other hand, how constant it is, that something that remains at its core, that really resists anything that might be done to it, and yet enjoys the possibility of walking out in a slightly different dress, as it were. So one of the things I do enjoy with this band is someone saying, you know what, I could never in a million years sing that. And of course, one has tried to preempt that idea and try to write something that's singable. But of course, one has to say, okay, well, let me change that.
We're talking with Paul Muldoon. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner, the New Yorker poetry editor. His latest compilation is also on a recording. It's called The Word on the Street, Rock Lyrics. And I was delighted that we asked you who were some of the rock lyricists that you particularly appreciate. And Van Morrison was one of them. I was particularly delighted to hear you mention a song of his that's also a favorite of mine. Maybe we could hear a little bit of that. We're not going to hear that. But it's a song called Rave On, John Donne, which just Rave On, John Donne, just those words alone kind of have a sweepingness to them.
Well, you know, one of the things about Van Morrison, the best of whose work is absolutely extraordinary, I mean, he's written a lot of really great songs. And one of the things that I think that Van Morrison understands, as do many of these great songwriters, and which I would, you know, hope to learn more about as if I continue to do this, as I hope I will, is to really go with the profound sense they have of the capacity of music to transform. And, you know, I think Van Morrison, among others, is interested in the possibility of ecstasy, of almost some kind of spiritual experience through music. And some of the writers to whom he appeals, as it were, William Blake, and to some extent John Donne, are have a kind of mystical, in some of their work at any rate, have a kind of mystical quality. And he, of course, you know, one way or another, I think has been interested in and influenced by that tradition.
Speaking of Morrison's, Jim Morrison put poetry into some of the music he did with the Doors, but he didn't do it all in a melodic fashion, mute nostril agony. He kind of recited a lot of it. But as I listened over to this, I didn't hear the way a Patti Smith might incorporate poetry into her music. Sometimes she'll just recite the words over a musical background. Why did you decide not to do that in this?
You know, in this particular album, we've spent the last couple of years recording songs. We've recorded writing and recording. This happens to be a range of what we've done, but there are several songs actually where the idea of spoken word, kind of voiceover, is much more to the fore. And people are patient enough to wait for our next CD, there's almost certainly, we haven't quite decided the lineup on that, but there's almost certainly going to be a song on that called Comeback, which I recite over a kind of quite funky beat. It's got at the heart of it is the idea that two people are making a comeback, and I'll just read you the very end of it. Let's remember the fans as we fan the embers, hit the meadowlands this coming September when we take each other's hands. Baby, let's remember we're just another band with only two surviving members. So, you know, there's that kind of thing. I think actually the others in the band seem to think that that's something that we should pursue.
Okay, Meadowlands, you're at Princeton in New Jersey, and also a Bruce Springsteen, someone who's you appreciate as a poet.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think Bruce Springsteen is a very good writer. You know, he's been able to, for example, in his response to 9/11, his album called The Rising. I mean, there are all kinds of responses to 9/11, and it's an extremely difficult thing to do or to have done. And his embodiment, some of the voices that cried out from that occasion, his capacity for allowing himself to be a medium for, I suppose, or what we might call ordinary people, whatever they are, men and women in the street, is really quite profound. And his response to that was really quite moving and deep in a way that actually may have escaped some of what might have been the more quote-unquote literary responses to it.
Really? What do you think about that song may have been missed by people?
You know, it's hard to know. I mean, it's very hard to know how it was judged at the time. I can't really say. I have a feeling that it wasn't quite appreciated to the extent that it might have been.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think his capacity to voice the feelings in particular, and indeed the ideas that might have been part of the collective unconscious, is really quite exceptional.
You also mentioned a song of his that you admire is The River.
I come from down in the valley where Mister, when you're young, they bring you up to do like your daddy done. Me and Mary, we met in high school, and she was just 17. We drive out of this valley down to where
Bruce Springsteen, just a little bit of The River, and I'm talking about the way that rock lyrics meld with poetry with Pulitzer Prize poet Paul Muldoon. What do you want to mention about that one?
You know, I'm struck just listening to it again there we heard, as you say, just a fragment of it, but the amount of ground that he covers in those first three or four lines in terms of setting a scene, establishing a couple of characters, their relationship, the landscape in which they have that relationship. It's absolutely brilliant. I mean, he's very concise, very really able to paint a picture in a way that many conventional poets or poets who are thought of, I suppose, as being slightly more serious, quote unquote, might find difficulty.
In The Word on the Street, you're connecting poetry to rock music, but of course the major music of today is rap, which dispenses with melody altogether and arguably is much more focused on words. When you listen to rap music, do you hear a lot of poetry there?
You know, I'm not the kind of expert in rap or hip-hop that I might be, though I must say that recently I had the pleasure of meeting DMC from Run DMC, and, you know, I've enjoyed a lot of their work. What I do enjoy of what I know of it, and this is true of various rappers, you know, including the oft mentioned Eminem, is that they do have a regard for the words that is actually not so common in rock and roll per se. They're interested in wit. They're interested in rhyme. I think those two aspects of rap music shouldn't be overlooked. And in fact, I think they're more and more interested in melodies. I mean, I hear a lot of rap, I've heard some rap in recent times, where actually they seem to have gone towards the orchestral as much as anything else.
Finally, we're just about out of time, so I'll ask you for a concise answer. It doesn't have to be 140 characters, though. Do you think Twitter has been good for people who aspire to be poets in that it forces one to compress thoughts into 140 characters? Is it actually useful?
You know, I myself am a bit of a Twitter or tweeting virgin. I've never actually done it. So I can't really respond as fully as I might on that. However, I think the impulse to be concise is in general a good one. In tweeting, I suppose, or indeed in the radio interview.
Paul Muldoon, thank you very much for coming by. We really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
He's a professor at Princeton. The new book is called The Word on the Street, and it is also incorporated into an album by the band he performs with, The Wayside Shrines. David Hyde produces our show with Arwen Nix. We get production help from Amber Cortez. Bernard Ouellette is our engineer. I'm Ross Reynolds.